Welcome to Not Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 3 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're discussing the stigma that comes with saying you need counseling, how to find a therapist, and what a good one looks like. We'll talk about how to get help for ourselves and those we love. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist.
Is that a Rolling Stones song?
Shame. Dun, 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 dun. Just a name. I don't know.
Is it? I don't know. It's probably not. It's probably not. It's
I've heard made up songs in your head when you drink too much caffeine.
Maybe that's what it is.
Shame. I know. I hear that word though.
It has to be a Rolling Stones song.
It sounds like it.
Shame. What you. See, I'm just going
to Or it might not be shame, and it's a different word, but we're making it be shame. I think shame dictates a lot of our lives, like our choices, the things we say, the things we don't say, the things we hide, the things we feel guilt about. And so much shame can like control our lives that we don't get to live our best because of that. And one of my favorite things to do is to say things out loud that we're not supposed to say, and then everyone else be like, yeah, me too, me too. And one of the ways that I have found recently that that is working well for me and the people I love is to say, hey guys, I'm in counseling. Have you met my counselor? Do you need her number? Let me give you the name of my counselor. So as a joke, because I think that's funny, but also like I know how life-changing it was for me and also really, really hard, but like good hard. And the life I'm living now, a year out from a lot of devastation, wouldn't be what it is without some good counseling. So I think as often as we can to say out loud, like, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to say you need help. It's okay to say, I don't know how to do this thing well, because nobody does everything well. And to like be self-aware enough to say, I need some help, is one of the most freeing and wonderful things you can do. To say, like, to raise your hand and surrender and say, this isn't how I want to live anymore, and I need someone to help me figure out how to do it better. And so, like for you, Jess, you did a million other things before you got there. And I think in the long term is that you got to where you needed to be. You just took the long route. Some of us, a lot of us do that. Like that's just, we try to fix things on our own. But then we get to the point where we can't do it on our own. I forget who said this, but like if we could be healthy on our own, we would have been by now.
Right.
And to step back enough from ourselves to see that, well, we got ourselves into this mess either intentionally or unintentionally, and we're going to need some help getting out. So speaking up and saying, I go to a counselor, like I don't feel any shame in that, but I know that that brings for a lot of people embarrassment and shame.
Mm-hmm. It depends. Just because it feels like you're weak.
Right.
It feels like a weakness to say, I couldn't do this by myself, in my opinion. But have you always been that way? Like even when you were younger, your child, teenager, were you always able to just like raise your hand and go, I need help? Can, you know, this is where I am. What do I do next?
Right. Yeah.
You always.
I think, yeah, my personality is I'm going to do things on my own. And then when I've always been overly self-aware, and I know what I'm capable of and what I'm not. Like, mm-hmm. I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm really not good at. And so speaking up has never been hard for me. Saying anything has never been hard for me. I have all the words, and I would like to tell them to you now. Like, that's not been a struggle for me. But I know for lots of people, I am married to someone that never wants to say the words.
Right.
And wasn't self-aware enough to say, I need help. And grew up in a house full of secrets and shame and let's be quiet and do not tell people what goes on here. Mm-hmm. Had things done to him that made him feel shameful as a child that were not his to bear. So I'm also like aware enough that I am raising children that may not have as loud of a mouth as I do.
Right.
So when I went to get counseling, I went with the intention that I needed help to help my kids process through some hard things we are going through. And like you said last time, that phone call that you make and the reason that you state you need counseling is never is never really it. So within within two sessions for me, my counselor was like, okay, well.
That's also the difference between us. Two, six. Six sessions for
me. Look, I'm not here to pretend. my face cannot pretend. You're going to know how I'm feeling by my facial expression. So I'm going to just be real quick. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to make everybody uncomfortable, and I'm going to tell you the truth. So I think the more people we surround ourselves with who say, I needed help, or I got help, or there was a season when I needed help, or there was a time when my marriage was struggling and we went and asked for help, or like you said, my kids are struggling and I don't know how to handle that. Like, I think everybody at some point could say, I just need to take an hour once a week to figure out how to do this better. And I need somebody outside of this situation to help me do that. But how do you do that? How do you find somebody that, first of all, changes your life or gives you the skills that you need to mm-hmm. handle, and who can also peel back the layers of why you think you need to go versus why you're really there? And what's a bad counselor? Like, I know you have said that you were young when you started counseling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was elementary school the first time I saw a counselor. But I think my dad recognized a lot of struggles that I had early, and I didn't have the voice because I didn't want to be one more stressful thing in my parents' life. So that's when I tried to start figuring it out on my own, and figuring it out on my own meant me trying to alleviate their stress. And then that means that my stress would be alleviated because my parents were happy. And if I made my parents, like, it was just this cycle, mm-hmm. and that's how it started. So it was like, no, you don't say it out loud. But my dad did recognize, like, wow, she's overly anxious and overly emotional. His opinion was, right. I was overly anxious, overly emotional. And so it was like, if my dad thought it was too much of those things, then it was just like, then don't show those things, you know, just be quiet and make his life easier. And so that's
also like oldest child things.
Absolutely.
In that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of birth order. Like, mm-hmm. it's everything there is pretty stereotypical, I think.
Yeah.
And then having a young mother, like, that obviously contributed to that. But there's still so much pride in figuring it out on my own. And that pride is still associated with my father. Like, if I figured this out all by myself, then I get to tell my dad after the fact, look what I did all by myself. Or like very casually share a story and it come out that like, I didn't have to call somebody. I didn't have to, you know, I tipped the tiller over and I figured it out by myself, or I had a flat tire and I did it myself, or I changed my, like, all these things that my dad purposefully tried to teach me so that I would not have to rely on other people. And I just took it to the extreme of, well, if I can show my dad that I didn't need anybody, then he's going to love me more.
Yeah. Like, you're an adult, but you're still a kid. Like,
oh, I think absolutely. That's when it comes to your parents, you're still the child.
Still that approval.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, I mean, my dad loved me. Like, that's, I don't want to get it twisted, but there was just something there that I think I feared my father the appropriate amount. And that fear and respect, like not fear, just fear of disappointing him. When I say that, I mean like I just never wanted to disappoint him. And respecting him. And so it was just like, he was just someone that I wanted him to be proud of me. Mm. And that's where but
as a kid, so many times, like, you don't know, like, the healthy boundaries that come with that.
Right.
And so, yeah, you just went extreme.
Right. And it's in a book that we'll talk about later, but the coping mechanisms that you cultivated as a child do not serve you as an adult. Very rarely do they serve you as an adult, because that's a little baby brain mm-hmm. that was going, this is what I need to do to survive. That doesn't make it right. And using those coping mechanisms as an adult definitely have not served me.
Yeah.
So how, like, that it took my entire life to go,
oh,
okay, this isn't working and I need help. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that I needed help until I was around other people that I knew were getting help. Like, I was like, okay, wow, that's really working out for them. I'm gonna give that a try.
Yeah.
So my dad recognized early that, or saw in me, that counseling would help somehow. Maybe because I talked too much as a kid. Like I said, talked too much, overly anxious, wound up, just
feels
very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling all the feelings all the time and needing to tell somebody about it. My dad's like, let's hire someone to handle this.
I don't have time for that.
And as a kid, I don't remember it being a negative experience, but I remember as a teenager going to different therapists and them saying things that I was like, wow, that doesn't seem appropriate. I remember having an issue with my dad's girlfriend, and I was just like, oh, I don't like her. And I had no reason to not like her other than she was dating my dad.
You're just a butthole kid.
Yes. I was a jerk. And the counselor said, well, has your dad had girlfriends before her? And I was like, well, yeah. And he was like, well, chances are he's going to have another girlfriend, so she's probably not going to be around much longer, and you're not going to have to deal with this. And I was like, huh? Like, this doesn't, nah, I don't know if that's actually how that works.
That's not how you reason that out.
Yeah. So here we are, 20 years later, still my dad's girlfriend. Like, that's not, yeah, you really
didn't give me any skills to help with my anger.
No, like, you made me have to act like an adult and just be nice to her because she's a nice person. I had to figure that all out by myself.
Give me my money back.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, things like that. Or I know that there's been couples counseling where a couple therapist was like, we were like, oh, well, you know, just whatever we're talking about. And he says, well, I've been married 45 years. I don't have any frame of reference. I don't understand that. What? You're a couples therapist and you're referencing your marriage and telling us that we're wrong? Like, this doesn't seem right.
It's not.
So I say follow your intuition when you're sitting in a therapist's office and you go, this is probably not the person for me. The person for you may be the person for somebody else, because that's how they receive information, and that's how they'll heal and thrive, is with someone who's maybe more straightforward. Or, you know, I don't know. I feel like the standards to be a therapist are the same across the board. So there should be a lot of good ones, and I'm sure there are, but that hasn't necessarily been my experience.
Well, I think somebody can be good for me and not be good for you too.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like personality and the way we communicate, the way we, like you said, process or heal, because we are all so different that not every counselor you go to will be the one that you stay with. And I think a good counselor knows that you might come in for one session, kind of like the interview, like that first time with
right.
Lisa, she sat with her laptop and she asked a lot of just like standard questions to take notes. And then I've never seen that laptop out again. And it's almost been a year, but like that first one is just like an initial intake and you're kind of feeling each other out. And it might not be where you stay. You might have to go through 3 or 5 before you find the one that fits. For me, I for my personal counseling, I would not go to a male counselor, just because like I feel more comfortable, talking to someone who has a little bit more similarities than, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with a male counselor. They can be smart and helpful too. Like my husband goes to a counselor and he sees a male counselor. So I think there are some things I would look for. I guess if you're going to a marriage counselor, you would want someone that has some good marriage advice. Not just someone's like, I've been married for 45 years. It's obviously easy for me.
Right, right.
Cool.
Have you ever seen a male counselor?
I haven't done much counseling. So we had to do like the premarital counseling through our church when we got married. And that was just, you know, kind of like,
you want kids.
Handle
yes.
your finances.
Yes.
We're going to save all our money. That did not happen. So just like, yeah. Are we going to have kids? Where are you going to live? How are you going to handle your in-laws? So just basic stuff.
Right.
There was about 6 or 7 years ago, and again, we'll get into, and we're not trying to just push it off, but the next episode's a little bit more about my story. We ended up in a church office with seeing a counselor for some issues that had come up, and I was very upset about some things that I had discovered, and it was a male counselor, and he tried to tell me that the things I was upset about, I was too upset about them, or that I was reacting too strongly to the things that I was learning. And I've been told my whole life that I've kind of been too much or too loud or too opinionated or too fill in the blank. And I'm kind of learning how that all fits with what my personality is in the past year. But to be told that I felt too strongly about something that my husband did that was destroying our marriage, like, infuriated me. So when we went into this counselor, it was, here's what my husband has done and the things he's been hiding. And we left with, maybe you should go get some counseling, Mary. Like, maybe you need to have some of your issues addressed. And suddenly it was not what Chris, my husband, was doing. It was about my reaction to them. Right. And I was reacting in anger, but it was based in hurt.
Hurt, yeah.
And for a counselor not to see that, like, as someone who at the time, I can tell now, was not healthy, you should have been, like, you're trained to see that. You should have known that.
Right.
And you're an idiot.
So...
take that.
So you think that shaped you in maybe finding a female counselor this time?
Yeah, I think, and I have a big personality. I'm an introvert, but my personality is big. And I think and I have in my work environment and just thinking about how I interact sometimes with males, I am sometimes, they are intimidated by me unknowingly. Like, I'm not doing anything on purpose, but sometimes I make males feel, I don't know, intimidated. That's, I've already said that, but just like I put off some kind of vibe that I'm not aware of and that sometimes people react strongly to. And I think a strong, smart woman counselor is what I need because if I think you're not smart, I will not listen to anything you say.
Yeah.
Like, I will immediately discredit you and you're a waste of my time. Look, it's very black and white in the Mary Graham world.
Sounds
in
like
or out.
It.
In or out.
That's funny.
So you said last time you were just getting ready. Do you have an appointment now, like, coming up? You're just ready to get back in?
I do. I have an appointment in a couple of days, and I am already nervous about it because I broke open a lot of things at once, and there's things I wish I wouldn't have. I was very, very comfortable. I was very comfortable keeping my secrets. And now that my secrets are out, I am not to the point where people say, like, when you speak them out loud, they lose their power. Yeah, I'm not there yet. Not there yet. So, and I've also learned through Lisa that when you share something that you've kept a secret for so long and there's been so much shame attached, your brain it's like in a survival mode, and it has processed that trauma and that experience in a very specific place, like deep, deep deep down in there.
Like subconscious.
And yes. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like you've opened it and your brain doesn't even know what to do with this information, how to process it, where to store it. There's a book, The Body Keeps the Score, and how this has physically affected me in the last couple of months too. I mean, the insulation, like the physical insulation, like somehow, and I'm not saying like I've gained weight because A, I love food, and B, I have done it too because like I felt like I need to protect myself somehow like from this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people do it because it's like nobody will see me if I'm heavier, or like it's the real me is underneath this, and just the things that you do. And like I said, and also unhealthy coping, eating, just eating because I'm sad, eating because I'm happy, just eating because I need to find something that brings me joy. Mm-hmm. So realizing that I broke open this part of me, and I don't think that I'm ready to go back to therapy. I mean, I know I'm ready. I don't want to.
Right.
But it doesn't, I've been doing a lot of things that I don't want to do. And most of them are unhealthy. So it's like, why don't you do something that you don't want to do that might actually be helpful? Also, that kind of rationalizing, like that is how like everywhere everything is right now. So I know I need to get back to Lisa and start from where I am right now, whether I want to or not.
Yeah.
I know she's a good therapist. I know that she's going to help me. It's just, oh my gosh, like I just don't want to feel all these feelings again. That's my thing. But she's a good therapist, and I know that I'm going to get through this and
better.
Yeah. She's going to be there, and she's going to hold my hand and guide me and ask me the hard questions. And also, like, there's been times where I've shared things with her and she's gone, this is how your body's more than likely going to react. And this is how your brain is going to react. And this is what's going to happen. And I mean, she preps me too. Like, when you experience this and you share these types of things, this is
what's going on.
So like kind of being prepared and not thinking like, oh, you're going to have another panic attack, you know, in the middle of the day, and going, oh no, actually this is your body going, hey,
processing.
Yeah. We're proud of you that you decided to do this, but we've got to reconfigure some things. Yeah. And so I'm grateful for that because, man, so many therapists, you go in and they're like, mm-hmm, yes, how does that make you feel? Mm-hmm, yes, how does that make you feel? And it's, and I'm not saying that, I mean, I don't know if you need validation, but I felt that my feelings and my experience is valid. I still struggle with, was it worth sharing because of how much work there is to do next? And so that's what I need to talk to Lisa about now. Like, gosh, tell me why this was a good idea.
Right. Convince me.
Yeah.
I think, and she has said this to me too, like there are cycles that you kind of go through, and you said a lot of scary, horrible things. And to heal correctly, you have to sit in it for a while, and you just took it and then sat. And there has to be a point.
Set up camp.
There has to be a point where you say enough sitting. I don't want to stay like this. And mm-hmm. I think you're ready for that. Like your brain knows that this is there. You want to go the next step, but it feels really hard because it's going to be work.
Mm-hmm.
That's again, like a good counselor will give you the space you need, but then won't leave you high and dry forever.
Right. And I'm guessing I'm not the first person that's just gone like
ghosted
MIA for a couple of months and then comes back. But I also do that like with my hairstylist, so it's fine.
Well, I think so for you, like you are kind of mentally preparing to go back and start doing hard work again. I've been intense hard work for the past year.
Right.
And I was going every week. I was taking my daughter every week, my oldest daughter. And then after about 8 months, it was, okay, let's go every other week.
Mm-hmm.
Not that suddenly life was perfect, but she had given me skills and equipped me in a way that when things were coming or when I could recognize how I was reacting positively or negatively to something, then as of right now, I'm going once a month. So I have my appointment again on in a couple days. And I've kind of told her, like, I feel in a safe, like, even healthy spot. There is still a lot of work to do in my life and in my marriage and in lots of other relationships, but I feel okay. But I hesitate to stop going to her. And that's what she has said, that a good counselor works themselves out of a job. So the goal is not to keep you unhealthy and stringing you along forever. The goal is to set you up for success. And so that when something happens again, you don't crumble. I mean, there is an element to breakdown of hard things in life anyway. Like that, there's no like counselor that will set you up to never feel things. Well, there are, but those aren't the good ones. Like, right. So there's just this idea that I don't want to give her up yet because I feel like, Lisa, we've had so many good times together. Remember that time I cried every 5 minutes?
But for like a year?
Yeah, for the past 12 months nonstop. But I also like the idea that she said you can always come back, like the check-ins. Like we have a couple that are married friends that they go to a counselor every 6 months just as like a marriage check-in.
Really?
As like a health, the health of their marriage check-in. And they talk about, you know, before they get into a pattern that's dangerous or a pattern that is hard to reverse, like to go and do these like just little mental health check-ins. So I think you can once – that's like how I'm rationalizing maybe giving up Lisa soon, is that I can still come back in and do – mental health checks. Mm-hmm. But I've also been going religiously for a year and doing a lot of hard work. My husband was going to counseling and doing some treatment things. Just the past year in the Graham household has been nothing but breaking down and building back up. And so I feel like at this point for us, we are not as reliant on counseling as we were. My husband will still be in counseling for a while. My daughter has stopped going. She just told me this weekend. So we were supposed to go to see a friend play softball, and things didn't work out the way they were supposed to. And my sneaky little 9-year-old daughter said, I think I need to go back to Miss Lisa. And I was like, oh, geez, why? What's wrong? She's like, well, I'm just lonely. I haven't seen any friends today. And I was like, oh, that's... That's called manipulation. And I'm sorry we missed the softball game. Like, so we're all aware of, you know, the things that Lisa has brought, or a therapist, a counselor has brought mm-hmm. to our lives. But also, I've even been like, hey, do you think I can come every other week? Like, I'm wanting her to tell me things are okay or not okay.
Right.
I don't know.
Do you think a good therapist does that? That they say, like... You're done here.
Yeah. I think that's what she did with Ellie.
Yeah, I didn't know if she needed, but if she wants you to come to that conclusion.
I think she would let me come back if it makes me feel safe.
Right.
But I did, like, when I went to every other week, I did, like, the check-in. Like, hey, do you think this we could do this every other week? You know, like, I want her to say yes because I want her to think I'm making progress, but at the same mm-hmm. time, like, I want her to say no because we need each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but she said this jokingly, but also truth, that like there will always be someone else that needs counseling, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I'm pretty sure from the pattern of my life, this shit is going to hit the fan again and I'm going to be back every week at some point.
If like we put pen to paper.
If we just look back at the last 36 years, I would like to say that I have hit all the bumps already, but that is not, mm-mm. that's not reality. So no. I just want to, maybe I should just keep a space and just pay her to uh-huh. hold my space and not uh-huh. even go uh-huh. just to like call dibs on my counselor because she's going to get busy again. I don't know. I need to stop recommending her to people.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Huh. I think it's important to recognize that as much as we advocate for therapy, there are different types of therapy, and maybe one-on-one therapy isn't for you, and there's countless different types of therapists in different settings.
And different theories.
Yes. And there's, so definitely shop around, do some homework. Don't just pick up your local Yellow Pages and flip through. I mean, unless that works for you, I don't know. Do people still use the Yellow Pages?
My grandma does. Reba. I think that's a really good point, is that like therapy or counseling is one component in like the health and healing journey. Mm-hmm. It's not an end all be all. It's not the only thing that will solve all of your problems. Like, some of us need medication to get healthy. Some of us need different therapies. Some of us need better boundaries. And like, when you take what you have learned and put it into life, it's one thing to pay someone to sit on their couch for an hour and talk about. But like, the hard work is actually when you leave that room and you start developing new patterns or allowing or not allowing different things into your life. Like, that's when the rubber hits the road, and there are lots of ways that can go good or bad depending on what choices you make when you leave that room with the information you have. So counseling is, I think, one part of healing.
And I think that it's important to, I think that a lot of people go to therapy like wanting an ally. Like, just agree with me. Like, let me just talk about this.
Let me tell you how horrible my husband is.
Right. And I just need you to agree with me. And that's, so I think it's necessary to look at it as an investment. Like, this is an investment in your life and your well-being and your mental health. So why wouldn't you reap all of the benefits of that? And like you said, by doing the work outside of that. And like you said, that's where you're really going to see the benefits of your investment. And as much money as you pay into it, you may as well put that much effort into it as well. Because being sane isn't cheap.
It's exhausting also.
I know. That's why I was just like, gosh, I don't know what's more tiring, being depressed or being, I don't know what it's like to be mentally healthy yet. I'll let you guys know if it's tiring too.
But even thinking about it is exhausting.
Pretending that you're mentally healthy is very exhausting. I know that. But yeah, it is. It's tiring to be, depressed.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of being tired because of depression. So I'm getting back on the therapy pony.
Oh my gosh.
That sounds awful.
Hey guys, everybody get on this pony. We're going to do some pony rides.
What is that?
Get back on the
There's no the pony.
Saddle. Get back in the saddle.
Oh, I think I'm thinking of
a mini pony.
The song "Ride It, My Pony."
Genuine.
Yes. Is that who it is?
Is this you trying to be mentally healthy again? And then
this is me trying to pretend that I'm not so loaded with caffeine right now.
That you're shaking.
I know. My voice is, speak slow and smooth.
And why is there a pony in here?
Does anybody else see that pony?
I don't mean to make this awkward, but do you guys see that pony in the room right now?
Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and podcast extras. Follow us at notterriblepodcast on Instagram or Twitter. We would love to hear your feedback and comments. Leave us a voicemail at 317-662-4066 or email us at notterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Mary, what's not terrible?
Thanks for asking. Well, I got this pony. I'm just kidding. So recently, my husband and I got away for the weekend. My cousin got married in North Carolina, so we got to take a little road trip without children. And we travel a lot. We have the opportunity to travel a lot, but we are often with two children and a dog. And traveling in a rental car, just the two of us, was for 3 days gone, was pretty awesome. Just, I kind of forgot what that was like. And I like my husband again after a few years of not liking him. So I enjoy being in a car with him for 9 hours. And we came back refreshed, tired, but it was a lot of fun.
A good tired.
Yeah, a good tired.
Yeah. It shouldn't be this hard to have something not terrible. Hey, you know what's not terrible?
What?
I scheduled a therapy session again after 2.5 months. That's what's not terrible. So I'm gonna use that.
Yeah, that you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Caring for yourself.
Yes, that's what's not terrible, is that I scheduled it.
Well, are you going to go?
What might be terrible is when I cancel it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to go. I'm going to go, and I'm going to sit in my mess in Lisa's office.
And have somebody else help you carry it for a little bit.
Yeah, just for a little bit. And I know that I'll feel better, but yeah, it's a good step.
It's time.
It's time.
Good.
Okay. Right.
See you later.
See you later next week. See you later next week.
Pony.
Ponies. Ponies.
've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from Who's Your Boy 90, who wrote, "Love the candor and realness from Jess as she discusses the tougher side of life. It's refreshing to see such honesty and rawness coming from someone. I'm glad she's here. I'm glad she's using her voice."
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and The Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.